WKOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Time to say hello and goodbye, I guess. This is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And we just heard a song called Goodbye by my good friends, Ism. Wonderful music from the Northeast, Brooklyn, New York, to be specific. We'll have music from Ism for the next few hours, okay, mixed in with the other stuff that I've got going on. So, all right, that song was called Goodbye. And speaking of goodbyes, we have to say goodbye to Debbie Johnson, my good friend Debbie Johnson, doing wonderful stuff on Free Range Radio Theater, as always, 10 p.m. Monday nights, an hour before this program. Debbie does it up, and always doing wonderful radio theater, and always sharing it with all of you. So thanks to Debbie. Okay, she'll be back in a week. What else? Kelvin and Jason. Before that, jazz plus blues equals the height of summer. Tech Radio, keeping us up on the fast-moving world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off every Monday, 3 to 5 p.m., with Uncommon Light. Good music, good talk, good news, and damn good radio on KOPN, your imagination station. Glad to be here with you and a part of it all. And I'd like to say hello to my good friend Ron, and another hello to his new son, although he is yet to be named. I think we're going to have to dedicate this this radio program to the newborn boys out there, some of the older born boys as well. Ron's a good man, and I wish him the best of luck with his new son, and I also wish him the best of luck with his older son. He has a great son named Christian, who I'm dying to get a hold of one of these days and run into. So, anyway, congratulations to Ron and his wonderful, beautiful woman, Alicia. They're all doing well, and the baby boy is doing well. And here's to y'all. We'll dedicate the show to y'all tonight, okay? All right, let's see. What else are we going to do? Got me all choked up there, you know? What happened was Alicia, her water broke at my house on Saturday. We had this party. We had a, you know, the solstice celebration that I've been talking about, that if you listen to this radio show, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Ron and Alicia were at our place, went for a pedal boat ride, and the next thing you know, her water broke. And, you know, so, anyway, it was wonderful, and I'm very excited and happy that all's well, and that a baby boy has been welcomed into our circle, into our tribe, as it were, okay? All right, one more time, congratulations to Ron and Alicia. Wonderful stuff, you guys. I'm very proud of you. Okay, let's see. Last week, thank you, Mr. Peter Light. Very informative ideas about sustainable community, intentional living, permaculture, things that may all come front and center sometime in the future, and certainly ideas that are, you know, worthy of consideration and discussion regardless of the necessity. So thanks a lot to Peter for being on the program and for the work that he's doing. There's a wonderful working document that is full of this information which Peter has made available. I've uploaded it to the site, and you can get a copy of it. You just have to go to the website, go to mikehagan.com, and then click on the forum. And there's a thread there on the front page in the forum about Peter Light. And if you go in there, you'll find the link to download this. I was going to post the whole thing on the forum, but it's 180 pages long or something. I didn't realize how long it was. So anyway, I put the whole thing up there as a Microsoft Word document, and there's a tremendous amount of very, very, very useful information in there, and I thank Peter for making it available for us, okay? So if you want to get it, just hop on the web, go to the forum, and you can grab a copy of it, okay? Also, thank you to Casey Rausch for providing us with the tunes for the show last week. Wonderful picking music from Kansas City. If you missed the show, it's all on the web, www.mikehagan.com. And just cruise on over to the program archives, all right? Okay, tonight, no guest except yours truly. A few things I've been wanting to talk about for some time. Tonight's the night, all right? I've been waiting for the right timing, but that may never come. So in a little bit here at the top of the hour, I'll share some personal experiences that have been an enormous part of my life for the last few years, experiences that are shaping my life as we sit here right now, and you know, we're going to talk it up. Also tonight, the music of Ism, wonderful rock and roll band from Brooklyn, New York. Ism was featured on the program last year sometime. I forget exactly when. I take it back. It was when Richard and Dennis were on the program. Richard Glenn Boyer and Dennis McKenna. We had Ism that night, back in May, I think, of last year. May Day, as a matter of fact. I wish my short-term memory worked as well as my long-term memory. I can't find my glasses and my keys and my wallet. I leave this stuff all over the place. I'm an absolute mess. I lost the gas cap to my neighbor's tractor the other day. I felt like a complete moron. I had to borrow her tractor because my tractor didn't work. I couldn't get it running so to mow my lawn so I could have the lawn mowed for this party that we did on Saturday. So I borrow my neighbor's tractor, you know. And she's a wonderful lady. And, of course, I mow my lawn and everything. I put gas back in the thing. And then I lose the freaking gas cap. I left it on the back of her mower and then took off, I'm sure. And so it's laying in my yard somewhere on 13 acres. Who knows where the hell it's at. So, anyway, you know, I'm absolutely, you know, a mess when it comes to, like, my short-term memory. But my long-term memory is pretty sharp these days. So, and it's a good thing, or a bad thing for some people. Depends. Anyway, we started things off with a song from Ism that's called Goodbye. And we'll hear another one from Ism in a minute. By the way, all the music and, or I should say, all the musicians I feature on the program, information about them can be found on the web at my website in the music archives, okay? All right, there's good stuff on the way. I've got, I don't know what it is in store for you, but hang in there with me, and we'll see how the whole thing unfolds. But we'll do space weather and all the usual stuff during the first hour anyway, and we'll play another one from Ism right now. Their CD, which I'm pulling all this music from, is their debut CD release. It's called Monkey Underneath. And we'll be back to talk about upcoming guests. Like I say, we'll do space weather and some news before we talk about some of my own personal high strangeness at the top of the hour. Okay. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. One more time, this is Ism. The song is called Can't Explain.
What?
Jack Splain. That's ISM on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and we do this every Monday from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning, and we're going to do it again tonight, okay? All right, hello to everybody listening to us this evening on KOPN over the traditional airwaves, streaming to you also on the web at kopn.org. You know, 40,000 watts coming through the radio at 89.5 on the FM dial. If you got no computer, or if you like it the old-fashioned way. We can also typically be heard live on the web via Cosmic Waves Radio Network on Monday nights, but something's been up with Cosmic Waves over the last couple weeks, and I'm not sure exactly what, so we're trying to get that figured out, and thanks to everyone who makes it happen in either place, and live or on the net, thanks to everyone who makes it happen. Also, thank you to the people out there who are sending art and music and poetry. Always wonderful to see that stuff and to share it with other people. So on the website right now, there are, you know, I'm sort of tossed up right now, to be honest with you. Larry and I, you know, we're brothers. He's my brother, and he's had a lot of changes in his life over the last few months, and there's always crazy stuff going on in my life, but I'm trying to decide what to do with the website because I can't do it by myself. I mean, I can, but I can't do it, you know, really well. There are a lot of things that get missed. And I'm not sure if Larry has the time, you know, with the other things that he's involved with these days. So I'm trying to figure out if I should just sort of streamline the website and make it a little bit more simple and eliminate some of the stuff that, you know, is not being updated anyway. Or, I don't know. I just don't know what to do. So just bear with us, okay? And it's just one of these sort of changing periods that we're going through trying to figure out how we're going to handle it, okay? So, anyway, bye, Jeff. Thanks, man. That's my friend Jeff Wheeler. He's leaving the station, but he does a wonderful show on Monday nights, Monday afternoons. I mention it all the time. Uncommon Light from 3 to 5 p.m. Cool, great music from who knows where that Jeff Wheeler plays for you every Monday. So, anyway, you know, the website, doing the best I can with it right now, and hopefully something will, you know, miraculously, you know, solve all my problems. And all of yours, too, by the way. All right? Why not? Okay. If you do go to the website, though, peek into the Poets Corner and the music archives and all that stuff. You know, there's still lots of stuff there. And a good place to hang out for a little while. All right? Let me know what you think of it, one way or the other. Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. You'll have access to everything that I'm doing over there. And take a look-see and shoot me an email or something. Let me know what you think. All right, there's a forum that is always busy and lots of interesting subjects and ideas and stories being talked about over there all the time. Actually, more than I can keep up with. And, you know, I'm always putting my own two cents in as well over there. But there's just a lot of stuff going on and lots of different people that are participating. Okay, that happens 24/7, not just on Monday nights, you know. On Monday nights, though, one of the cool things that we do during the program is have a live chat. And there is a live chat up and active right now, as there is every Monday night. Just go over to the website and click on, well, live chat. And that'll do it. Okay? And you can join us. I'm in there myself right now and a number of other good folks. And you can sort of participate in the program as we roll along. Okay? My email address, for those of you interested in sending me mail, OrbitRadio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, OrbitRadio at AOL.com. Send me email. Right? I appreciate it. Guests and musicians alike appreciate email correspondence. So feel free to write to me, and feel free to write to my guests, and that includes musical guests, okay? All right, the phone number here in the studio, if we decide to take any phone calls later, you might write this down, 573-443-8255. 573-443-TALK, and, you know, for future reference or maybe later this evening, all right? And if you want to call me just in the studio during a break, the number here is 573-874-5676, okay? That won't get you on the air, though. That'll just have a chat with me when we're breaking, okay? All right, upcoming guests. Tonight, as I mentioned, no particular guests other than myself, and I'll just, you know, talk your ear off for the next couple hours. Got a lot of things to talk about. Next week, my friend, Richard Allen Miller. Very excited to have Richard back on the program. He's a busy guy and involved in all kinds of good stuff. And so we'll talk with him about some of it next week. Richard Allen Miller, backed by popular demand. A lot of people want to hear Richard talk again, and he is awesome. So we'll do that, okay? Next week, we'll say hello to him. Richard Allen Miller, backed by popular demand next week. 7-2, that's the 2nd of July. On the 9th, I think we'll have Bardo back on the program. Kent and I haven't done a show in a while. Kent Stedman, of course, my good friend and mentor, the wizard from cyberspaceorbit.com, who's just whizzing his way back into Seattle, by the way, and I know that because he was at my pad for a few days, him and his lovely woman, Wendy, and I was so pleased and privileged to have them, you know, spend some time with me and my family. It meant a whole lot to us, and just had a wonderful time, and he's a wonderful, wonderful man with a great family of his own, and it's a pleasure to be, you know, in his tribe. So, okay, who else? Patrick Flanagan. I got to get back in touch with Dr. Flanagan, but we'll do that sometime this summer. John Perkins, the week after we talked to Bardo, on the 16th of July. John Perkins, holy cow, the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, among other things. He's also a shaman of sorts, and certainly knowledgeable in the ways of indigenous people south of the border, I tell you that much. So anyway, John Perkins on the 16th of July. Very excited to talk to John, and a big thank you to Peg, his assistant and partner of some sort, I guess, for helping me set that up. All right, again, that's on the 16th of July. After that, sort of open for business. I don't know what I'm doing. Got Richard Tarnas that we need to get back in touch with, John Major Jenkins, Dennis, lots of other people that sort of floating around there and trying to decide what to do with, but as always, it'll sort of come together as we move forward, all right? Okay, time is it? 25 after? Announcements. Let me talk about a couple things real fast here before we do space weather. The 21st of June is, well, it's a special day for lots of people for lots of reasons. It's the height of summer, for one thing, the longest day of the year. It's also the anniversary of the death of one of my friends, and I don't know if I ever mentioned it, but his name was Frederick Hyde Hibbard. And Hyde passed on in 1996 on the 21st of June, and I always think about him every year around this time, and his family, and his mother in particular, who I love with all my heart. And anyway, here's to you, my brother Hyde. Thank you for sticking around with me. Okay, the 23rd of June, we had a big party at my place, and, you know, I just mentioned it a little bit, but Kent Stedman and Wendy were there, Dr. John Sheliak, a bunch of my friends from around town here, my lovely wife, of course, and our kids were running around there, Matt, Johnny, Ruth, Jeff, Lucas, Chris, all of you, thanks so much, Lara, everybody who came over and had a good time, I appreciate it. Of course, Alicia, who I mentioned at the beginning of the program, she and her husband, Ron, were at our place, and they're friends of ours, and I was happy to see them because Alicia was due to have her baby yesterday on the 24th of June. Anyway, on the 23rd, they came over to our house, and, you know, she's 9 months plus pregnant, and, of course, they decided to go for a little pedal boat ride out there in the pretty little lake, and next thing you know, Alicia's in labor. Her water broke right there on the water. I guess that's what it's all about. But anyway, it was a little nerve-wracking. I was very nervous about it, actually. I was like, you know, men don't do well in those circumstances, especially when it's unexpected. So anyway, a huge congratulations and great job. Kudos the whole bit to Ron and Alicia and their wonderful new baby boy. So all that got going on Saturday. We had a good old time. We had lots of musicians that were there. Ruth and Jeff, you know, from Rutherford, just playing some great stuff. Kent Stedman played all day and all night. I'm sure the Bard's fingers must be bleeding. Johnny's fingers were bleeding. I know that. He said that this is my friend Johnny from Colorado, and he can play the guitar all day. But he said, man, Mike, my fingers were sore. So there was a whole lot of picking going on and singing and hollering and the whole bit, banging on drums. And anyway, we had a wonderful time and a lot of good conversation as well. So thanks to everybody who came down, and we'll do it again next year, and we'll make it bigger and better, or smaller and better, okay? Or the same size and better, I don't know. Maybe the same size and the same. Maybe it'll be worse, I don't know. But just come on out if you get the gumption next year, okay? The solstice celebration. We do it every year at my place out in Roachport. All right, space weather. We'll come back and do that in a few minutes, but I think we'll play a song first to sort of set the stage. This one is called Beside the Sun. It's Mike, and you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. This is ISM, Beside the Sun. Beside the Sun, that's ISM from Monkey Underneath. And this is Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. All right, space weather. The planets are aligning. Venus and Saturn converging right now for a close encounter on the 30th of the month, where they will be right on top of one another almost, two-thirds of a degree apart, if you want to get technical about it. But for all practical purposes, they will look like one point up there in the sky. you can watch the distance between them sort of close in the nights ahead. You'll have to go outside around sundown. You look to the west, Venus will be the brightest object in the sky. And Saturn will be very close to Venus, and it'll look a little, like, I don't know, yellowish, have a sort of a yellow tint to it. All right? So, if you want to see sky maps and where other things will be in relation to these two planets, hop on the web, go over to spaceweather.com, and they've got this whole thing sort of mapped out for you. All right? Okay. For the past 12 days or so, the sun has been relatively blank, at least the part of the sun that we're able to look at. No sunspots particularly to speak of in the last couple of weeks, and solar activity in general has been low. But there's a wonderful, well, I don't know if it's wonderful, but it's interesting for sure, this Hinode or Hinode spacecraft that is a Japanese solar monitoring system, and it watches for X-rays. And there's a lot of X-rays that are popping up over the eastern limb of the sun right now, so people are expecting that maybe a sunspot or a group of them will appear soon. Actually, if I look on the web right now, it turns out they've already updated this, and yeah, a sunspot is now emerging over the eastern limb. And if you want to see photos of that, you can do that as well. Lots of other different images that have been taken from all around the world. Okay, Venus pillars. This is another word that we were talking about Venus a couple minutes ago, so I'll tell you an interesting phenomenon that happens with the planet Venus once in a while and other stellar objects up there. There's a thing that they call a Venus pillar, and what happens is you can actually be watching. You can have it right in front of your eyes. You can be staring at the planet Venus, and all of a sudden it will elongate, and the shape will change, and it'll spread down into like a vertical column of light. And it's clearly visible, you know, to the unaided eye. You can do it, you know, with the naked eye. And it happened just the other night. They call these things Venus pillars, and they're caused supposedly by flat crystals, flat ice crystals that come down from high clouds, supposedly. And these crystals reflect light in a different way. And, you know, anything that is sort of in between the crystals and the object that you're looking at will have this, it'll have a distorted shape. And that's exactly what happened if you're looking at Venus the other night from, well, I guess this guy was in Quebec City. And pretty cool stuff, all right? All right, when the sun goes down tomorrow, take a look outside, all right? Look west for your own Venus pillars. Maybe you'll get one. If you don't see any, you'll be able to see Saturn, if nothing else, right next door there, okay? All right, sky notes for, let's just talk about tomorrow, I guess. Venus and Saturn closing, they'll be about 3 degrees apart and getting very close on the 30th of the month. Like I say, look to the west after sunset. You'll see brilliant Venus, and Saturn will be just up and to the left, all right? Regulus is about 8 degrees to the upper left of Saturn, and there's lots of other things to look at the same time. You know, I should mention that, you know, when the planets look like they're close to each other, of course, it doesn't mean that they really are. I mean, Venus is about 50 million miles from Earth, and Saturn is almost 100 million miles. I mean, it's 900 and some million miles away. So you get 850 million miles in between Saturn and Venus. But, of course, in the sky, when they cross paths, well, it just appears that they're right next to each other. All right, what else? Asteroids flying by, as always. There's one particular one called 17059 Elvis. So Elvis has left the building, but coming close to Earth on the 29th of June. What else is happening on the 29th? Cassini flying by Titan again. Alexis Bouvard's 240th birthday, born in 1767, if you're interested in that. Cassini is going to be flying by Tethys, Methone, and Mimas on the 27th. And then, listen to this. There's a whole bunch of, I don't know what's going on this week, but something must be in the air, because there's all kinds of different conferences that are going on everywhere, more than typical. So I'm just going to read a few of them here to you, and you can choose which ones you'd like to be at. All right, the 25th, starting today through the 29th, all these go all week. In San Antonio, Texas, the magnetospheres of outer planets meeting. All right. In Cardiff, in the UK, we have the IAU Symposium 244 on Dark Galaxies and Lost Baryons. In Sesto Alto Adige, in Italy, the Conference of Tracing Cosmic Evolution with Clusters of Galaxies 6 years later. I'm not sure what the hell that is. In Seattle, Washington, where Kent's hanging out, the workshop on neutron star crust and surface, observations and models. Well, I don't know anyone that's observed a neutron star, at least not up front. The 25th to the 29th, again, the workshop on fundamental symmetries from nuclei and neutrinos to the universe. That's in Villazzano, Italy. That sounds like an interesting one, actually. I'm into this whole fractal idea and the idea that, you know, the universe is sort of, not sort of, but exactly scalable and self-similar along the scale. Things go up and down, but they're always very much alike, I think. Anyway, what else? The 7th workshop on catastrophic disruption in the solar system. That's in Spain, Alicante, Spain. So all these different things happening. I'm interested in that one as well. Catastrophic disruptions in the solar system. That reminds me of, you know, Immanuel Velikovsky and all the fun stuff that he liked to talk about. All right, what else? 10th anniversary of Galileo. Well, I should say that the Callisto 9 did a flyby of Galileo 10 years ago, 1997. Well, that's about all for space weather, okay? Let's take one more break here. And, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe I'll just talk about some stuff in the news for a minute. What do I got here highlighted? Plants send out SOS signals. Wow. Listen to this, okay? This is from my friend Ian. Thanks for posting this, buddy. Plants send out SOS signals when they are under attack. If insects are feeding on them, some plants emit volatile chemicals that attract enemies of the insects. What is surprising, though, is that neighboring plants not being eaten also send out distress signals to call in these bodyguards. Why so-called secondary signalers do it has been a mystery, but now Yutaka Kobayashi and Norio Yamamuro of Kyoto University in Japan think they have solved it. The answer is family values, or in an evolutionary parlance, kin selection. My hypothesis views secondary signalers as crying for help to save their family, says Kobayashi. The pair used an evolutionary model to show if the cost of making the SOS signal was low and there was a high likelihood of having relatives growing nearby, both conditions which are often true in real life, then secondary signaling would evolve. Neighboring undamaged plants emit the secondary signal, probably to help the damaged plants, says Kobayashi. Yeah, you know, the plants are just trying to help their friends, same as you and I would do, I hope. And if you're their friend, they'll try to help you too. They're really cool like that. And another note, you know, for vegetarians out there, you know, take note. No such thing as a free lunch. All right? We should just end the bloody debate on the subject. All things must eat to live. All things must eat other things that were or are alive to live. Your vegetables were screaming when you chopped them out of the garden without thought, with indignity. All right? The animals and the plants, they're the same. Of course you have to eat, so you eat, but you eat with respect. You eat with respect for those who gave their life so that you could live, plants and animals alike. Now there's another sort of follow-up to this story that came out that I found just a couple of days ago. But listen to this. Plants recognize their siblings. This is from the Royal Society on the Journal of Biology Letters in England. Okay, plants are able to recognize their siblings, according to a study appearing today in the Royal Society Journal, Biology Letters. Researchers at McMaster University have found that plants get fiercely competitive when forced to share their space with strangers of the same species, but they're accommodating when potted with their siblings. The ability to recognize and favor kin is common among animals, but this is the first time it has been shown in plants, Susan Dudley, associate professor of biology at McMaster in Canada, said. When plants share their living space, they get competitive and start growing more roots, which allows them to grab water and mineral nutrients before their neighbors get them. It appears, though, that they only do this when sharing a pot or space with unrelated plants. When they share a pot with family, they don't increase their root growth, because differences between groups of strangers and groups of siblings only occurred when they shared a pot. The root interactions may provide a cue for kin recognition. The other thing is you're taking them out of their natural environment. I mean, you're putting them in a survival situation, essentially imprisoning the plant. In other words, you take a plant and you put it in a pot. That is an imprisonment. It has nowhere to go. You know, it's as far as it can go. The walls of the pot determine as far as the plant's root systems can go. So if you introduce more plants into the same pot, right? Well, I mean, there's going to be competition. It's forced on the plants, whether they like it or not. I mean, it becomes a survival instinct thing. And yes, of course, you would probably be less likely, you know, to be aggressive against your own family members and your own relatives, you know, than maybe a species that was further from you. Again, natural. You know, it makes sense if you think about it the way you would act if you were in a prison and didn't have any food, you know, and you had to share with all of a sudden a bunch of other people that were put in. Eventually somebody, you know, cracks or whatever. It becomes a survival issue, right? These plants in the wild, I mean, you know, they're perfectly comfortable with the other plants. Of course, when you put them in a pot, they're gonna have some difficulty, you know, no matter who you put in there with them, because there's a limited amount of space, there's a limited amount of nutrients, and a limited amount of freedom, frankly. You know, people think about plants and they think they don't move. Well, they do move. They move all over the place. They just don't move as quickly as, you know, as monkeys do. In fact, monkeys move a lot of the plants around, you know, for the plants. So, there's been an interesting relationship between the monkeys and the plants for a long, long time. One that better be recognized again. Or, it's curtains for a whole bunch of monkeys. So, anyway, it's a great, great post from Ian, and brings up a lot of very interesting topics and subjects and conversation, all right? Mashing the art pedal. What's your art? This is another post from the forum here that Redman says, and he's wonderful. He takes a great picture of his beautiful daughter who's doing ballet. And obviously for this man, photography is at least one of the arts that he enjoys. But for other people, you know, this is what's happening on the forum. They're talking about art and what we all like to do to express ourselves in a creative fashion. For me, you know, it's Radio Orbit and my website. But I also think of, like, my gardens and my plants and, you know, techniques of growing and this sort of stuff. I think of all that as art. I think anything can be art. I think that the intention of the artist is all that's required to make it such. And I wish I could do it all the time. I wish I could do it full time. You know? I wish there was more work for love. Somebody, I forget who it was, is a wonderful quote by somebody that says, if you can't work doing things that you love, then you shouldn't work at all. You should only do things, it should be a labor of love, you know? And unfortunately, a lot of people, I think, on the planet these days are doing labors, you know, that are other than for love. They're doing things that they sort of feel they have to do out of necessity for, you know, again, survival in many cases. So I'd love to see more people be able to, you know, to do their art and to do it more of the time and have more and more time to do art. And because I think that's really what it's all about. As Redman says, the art pedal, push it to the metal. That's what we're trying to do, okay? All right, what else? Scientists now know we're not from here. Here's a great one. You all love this, all right? A little psychedelic influx from a bard, Kent Stedman. imagine the shock of growing up in a loving family with people you call mom and dad and then suddenly learning that you're actually adopted. The same sense of shock came as scientists announced that the sun, the moon, our planet, and all its siblings were not born into the familiar band of stars known as the Milky Way galaxy, but we actually belong to a strange formation with the unfamiliar name of the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy. A new infrared digital survey of the entire sky was made in 2003. It took them 4 years to tell us this, but at any rate, teams from the University of Virginia and Massachusetts used a supercomputer to sort through 500 million stars to create a new star map showing our solar system to be at the exact nexus crossroads where two galaxies are actually joining. You can go read about this on the forum. It's a post by Kent Stedman. It says, scientists now know we're not from here. And there's a lot of interesting talk that follows that up on the site. Great stuff, Kent. Thank you for posting that. All right, and let's see. One more here to sort of set the tone for the top of the hour. Here's one. Insulation with mushrooms. This is from Yahoo News. All right. I think it came out actually today. Eben Bayer grew up on a farm in Vermont, learning the intricacies of mushroom harvesting with his father. Now the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute graduate is using that experience to create an organic insulation made from mushrooms. More at home on a pizza, mushrooms certainly aren't a typical building material, but Bayer thought they just might work when given the assignment to take 2 years to create a sustainable insulation. Anyway, very interesting story about growing insulation. And this is right along the lines of some of the stuff that we've talked about with Paul Lathely and the ideas of incorporating living entities, living creatures, plants, and in this case mycelium into our living structures and closer into our lives, whether for fun or by necessity. Really cool to know this stuff is happening. This is brilliant, actually, the way they did this thing. But I'll let you all read it about yourself. Okay, it's called Mushrooms Become Source for Echo Building. It's an AP story on Yahoo, but you can check it out on my website on the forum. Just look for the link that says insulation with mushrooms. Okay. All right, it's Mike, and you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM. I'll be back at you in just a few minutes, okay? In the meantime, another song from my good friends, Ism, from their CD, Monkey Underneath. This one's called Wake Up, Write It Down.
Together, it's human well. You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right, everybody. It is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. And it's a few minutes after, just a couple minutes, as a matter of fact, after midnight. Now on the 26th of June, 2007. All right, so tonight, not talking to anybody except myself. And, well, I guess I'll just get going right now and tell you what I'm going to do. I've had a number of very interesting and strange experiences, during the course of my life. None more remarkable than the ones I'm going to share with you guys tonight. And I guess I'll just tell you. And just start doing exactly what I'm going to do. The first time that I ate mushrooms, psilocybin mushrooms, in a setting and a set that was actually intentional, you know, where I actually knew what I was doing and considered what I was doing very, very long and hard before I did it. The first time I did that was April 23rd, believe it or not, of 2005. It's only been a couple years. And Terrence and I were friends. Terrence McKenna, of course, I'm talking about. And, I heard his rap and I listened to everything he said and read all of his books. And I'm, very well versed on, the talks and the ideas and the notions of Terrence McKenna. But it took me until 2005 to actually do what he had asked me to do. So on the 23rd of April, 2005, I did that. Now, prior to that, I'm 42 years old, so I was 40. I was 40 years old at the time, or 39, whatever it was. And I had had experiences with mushrooms, I don't know, not a lot, but a number of times in the past, in college, somebody had, suggested we do this, and then once in a while, there have been maybe a couple, three times in between then and, 2005. But it had always been, piddly doses that you didn't know where they came from. And, it was, for the most part, recreational and nothing really astonishing, happened. And so I really don't consider those things as the real deal. I consider the real deal what happened to me on the 23rd of April, 2005. And so what I'd like to do, there's a whole bunch of this. We got 2 hours, all right? So I'm just going to let it out tonight and let you guys know a bunch of stuff, all right, whether you like it or not. So I'm actually going to read from my journal here, okay? I keep a journal, and I'm going to read to you from my journal of 2005, all right? All right, here goes. April 23rd, 2005, 4:32 p.m. I ate 3.5 grams of my favorite pizza toppings. 4:49 p.m., no effect except a heightened level of awareness. Now you have to bear with me here because my writing in my journal gets very sketchy as we will move forward here. All right, so anyway, just bear with me. Where were we here? Okay, no effect except a heightened level of awareness. Tingly, good. Candles, good weed, water. Ritualized prior to ingestion. Ate almost all of them. another gram and a half 5 minutes later at 4:53. I was compelled to take all I had. A voice in my head said, "Eat the rest, Mike. Eat the rest. For 15 minutes, eat the rest, Mike. Eat the rest." Finally, I got up and ate the rest. We'll see if that was wise or not. 5:15. Eyes open, no great change. Eyes closed, imagination kicking in, but no outrageous imagery as of yet. Deep, deep sexual arousal at 6:05 p.m. So much. Singing, singing. Ecstasy. Oh my God. Laughing and singing. Words. The friends. Tell the world. Oh, so much beauty in the midst of tragedy. Oh, oh. Time to write before it comes back. Now, I'll interject here in between sometimes to tell you what was going on. The psilocybin experience at this level, and I had eaten about 6 grams at this point, comes in waves. The billows, Terrence used to call it, you know. And when it comes, I mean, it's 10 miles high and 100 miles wide, and it's barreling down right at you, and there's just nothing you can do. You just lay down in awe of the thing, and it's pretty much incapacitating for most people. But then it backs off a little bit. It's like a wave rolls back out. And during those times, I was trying to gather myself and to document as best I could. Okay, so that's why I wrote right there. It says, time to write before it comes back. All right, back to my journal here, okay? You should be dancing and singing, all of you, everywhere. You should be dancing. You should be dancing and singing. Thank you, my mother. Thank you, Earth World. 6:30 p.m., 2 hours since I ate them. It must be written. It must be remembered. Oh, my God. How can it be a secret? You come through. You come through. You come through. There is a leading edge of light. It's only been 2 hours, and everything has changed. Ashley, Ashley, you must know. Ashley, you must know. You must know. Oh my God, it's hard to take it, all of it. Man, woman, come on, come on, it's coming. This is what it's all about. Oh my God, come on. This is what they're trying to stop. And they don't even know it. They don't know it. How can you stop something that you do not know? Oh my God, there is a leading edge of light. And it is coming. It is coming. I mean, I'm just a babbling ape. A babbling ape who can write and make pictures with poison ink. Is this paint? Who knows? Oh my God. Ashley, you must know about this. And it is not what you think. I love you. Force me to tell you. Force me to tell you all about the mushroom. You must know. And Alistair must know when he is of age. Now, there's some amazing imagery that I drew in my journal, too. I mean, I don't know how I did some of this stuff, but I can read it to you as well, alright? This is why they are made unavailable. This is why we are told they are illegal. Because of this, nothing else. Because at this level, oh my God, 7:15 or so, it's going on 3 hours, oh my God, I'm trying to take it and to tell about it. It must be known. How can it be such a secret? Ashley, it's way overdue. It's time for you. You must know that these things exist and are real. You must know. It is nearly impossible to continue right now. But just understand that I love you. And you must know about this. you must know about the mushroom. Oh my God, I'm tingling everywhere. It's 7:15 or so. I'm trying to document this experience. Oh my God, more. Paint, sing, dance, fuck, dance more, write, pray, pray, pray. I can't believe that this is a secret. Over and over and over and over again. That's why Terrence did it. Why he said it over and over and over again. This is why. This is why T kept saying it. Now I know. Oh, now I know. So what's next? What's next? I mean, really, what's next? What could be next? I mean, now I know. This must be shared. This must not be kept a secret. Okay, deal. No more secrets. Whoa. How could this be a secret? How could this be a secret? Oh my God. Machines. Machines. I'm so vocal when I do this. Okay. I'm just trying to take it. I'm trying to take it, and I'm trying to document it. But it is difficult. It is very difficult because of the intensity. But everyone, everywhere must know about this. All else, all other things, politics, science, religion, media, business, health, education, they are simply diversions from this. This is primary. This is primary. And I'm trying to document it. Oh my God. Oh my God. The goddess. The god. The goddess. I'll be back. It just keeps coming. Imagine. Just imagine. It's just too much. It's just too. Then my writing just trails off, you know. And I wrote two in every way you could write it possible. The number two, you know, the numeric two, and then the number two written, T-W-O, then the word two, T-O, and then the word two, again, T-O-O, and then finally it just sort of trails off. But then it comes back and says, it requires concentration. It requires concentration. Alex, remember, it requires concentration. Words, words, words. You see, it's all for her. And she can do whatever. She can do it with me, and she can do it with you. She can do it with the entire planet. It's what she is. How can I even be writing this? I can't. And I have to piss again. Oh my God. Oh my God. Where are you, my goddess? Where are you? Where are you? When are you coming home? Where are you and when are you coming home? Home. 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 Om. Om. Okay, try. It's just too much to bear. Are you able to just grab hold of it? Oh my God. Are you able to just grab hold of it? Oh, when it happens, it's so sexy. And then she stops. Oh. Oh. And my hands are so tired. My hands are so tired. But what to do with the... I'm sorry, it's hard to read. But what to do with the word? It must be shared. It must be shared. Oh, shit. I love it. I love to watch it. It is amazing to see the light. Oh my God. And here, and over here, and here. She is everywhere. Oh my God. She is everywhere. She is everywhere. She is here, and here, and here. She is here, and here, and over here. Oh my God. She is everywhere. Oh my God, what has been done? What has been done? And really, what is going on? There must be more light, first of all. But it keeps itself secret. It keeps itself secret. You know, I could write a lot more that I haven't written. There's a lot to write. There's a sort of crazy side of this whole thing, too. I guess that's what spooks people. They don't want to look at that stuff. They don't want to take a stroll on the seamy side. Oh my God. So that's the way I ended the entry from 4/23/2005. This is 4/24. Okay. The day after. A pretty life-shaking experience. I did it. Jumped off the abyss. Trying now to reconcile. So much of what happens in those spaces cannot be brought back here. But I have never before experienced such raw emotion, feeling. It was wonderful at times, terrifying at others. I sensed a membrane of some sort, which separated worlds, and I was briefly allowed to punch through. The sense of imminent change seems to be what they are trying to convey, trying to help us deal with what is coming. What is it? I sensed great light approaching. I saw a leading edge of light, like the bow shock of an electromagnetic wave. It is coming. God, what could it be? How could you ever prepare for it? The answer may lie with the mushrooms. Because of their ability to toss you fully out of this box, to show you how alien things can really get. Because maybe that is what is going to be required, the ability to deal with very alien things. At times, I was utterly incapacitated, begging. At other times, I could not stop moaning and singing, and sort of babbling, like an old Indian. There is an utterly feminine quality to it, the mushroom. And she wants everything. And she can be cruel, and she can be beautiful. There are machines there, strange, geometric machines, huge or very small, impossible to tell, morphing, rotating, Rubik's cubes stacked and connected in all directions, rotating, spinning, morphing. There is so much information, but it is very difficult to grasp it all, to bring it back. But some of it is clear. There is definitely a teaching thing going on at some level. The whole thing lasted under 4 hours, and I was interrupted a few times by the phone. In fact, I tried to call people, but that was toward the end. In the heart of it, I could not speak. I could only sing or hum or moan. Crazy irony. I must have scribbled 20 pages while I was tripping, and if you read what I wrote, it is pretty disjointed and incoherent. The irony is that when I was writing, I was more coherent than at any other time in my life. The other times, words and language were not even a possibility. It was like there were these short bursts when I thought, okay, now I have a short chance to write, and I could do the best I could, knowing that at any moment I would be incapacitated again. Well, I did it. 5+ dried grams. Next time, I will see if I can do it again and bring back more. But it will be a long time from now. I have enough now to think about for some time. Tomorrow, Stephen Herod Buhner and the music of Yachai on my radio show. Today was Earth Day. Did some stuff at KOPN for the event. Oh yeah, I need to mention the profundity of the visual experience. Whoa. I could see incredible detail of things. Fire, sound, all senses seemed alive and visual. Now the 25th of April, 2005. After a little more time to consider the experience, the whole thing seems now to be the experience of a woman. Like I experience everything that a woman could possibly give, good, bad, and ugly. Was this my introduction to the goddess of the earth? It sure seems like something like that. All right, let's take a break, everybody, all right? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's about 23 minutes after the hour. And I need to take a breather here, have a little glass of water, and listen to one of my favorite songs. It's called Monkey Underneath. This is Ism. My name is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOP in Columbia. Monkey Underneath. That's a title track from my friend's ISM CD called Monkey Underneath. They're a wonderful band out of Brooklyn, New York. You can find information on the web about the band at ismmusic.com. And you can also link there directly from my site anytime. All right? Great stuff. You can also find them on MySpace and that whole business, okay? All right. So you just heard it. My first deep, ritualized, you know, serious mushroom experience. That's exactly what happened as I wrote it. And there's more to the story, as you might imagine. So I'm going to continue, and I'll just sort of fill in a little bit. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the chat that I want to address, but I sort of can't right now, and I'm hoping that maybe some of the things that are being talked about in there, I can, or at least my position on them, will become clear with what I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But anyway, okay, so April 23rd, 2005, just a stunning, life-changing day for me. And after that, well, a number of things happened. I mean, first of all, the mental side of it, you know, lasts a lot longer than the experience itself, trying to reconcile what happened and come to terms with it, you know, through a rational lens, which is very difficult. You know, in our culture, we're all conditioned, no matter who we are, and no matter whether you think you are or not. I mean, the conditioning is so deep and so thorough and begins at such a young age that we're all just sort of programmed to believe certain things. And, you know, it takes a lot of effort to get around that stuff. And this is one of the remarkable things about psilocybin, is that, man, I mean, the mushroom goddess will help you get around that stuff. And it takes a while afterwards, you know, to just sort of parse the whole thing out, because there's a whole lot to think about, because it throws a monkey wrench, and it throws a lot of monkey wrenches into a lot of different ideas that were probably, you know, pretty firmly held prior to the experience. So I was no different. All of that happened to me. And, the way I want to continue with it is I'm going to fast forward. Essentially, I'm going to fast forward to October of last year. This is now October 2006. What's that, 18 months or so after my first experience in April of 2005. I wrote a letter to someone who was very close to me, and I'm going to basically read from that letter and let the rest of this sort of story unfold. And then I don't know how long it'll take, and I don't know what else we'll do afterwards. Maybe we can talk about it or something. All right. Okay. Now this is basically the way I start my letter. Okay, man. Here goes nothing. I'll attach this whole thing as a Microsoft Word document, and I'd appreciate it if you keep it safe and private. There'll be a number of attachments that go along. Okay. Big sigh. You know, as I look at this, I can't read it without. I basically can't read it without telling you who it was written to. It was written to Dennis McKenna. All right. Okay, big sigh. Early in the AM hours of April 3rd, 2006, I sent you a short email. It said, "Just a quick thank you, Dennis, for all you've done. 'Twas not in vain." Here's the story behind that note. About a year earlier, I ate 6 grams of mushrooms in a ritualized setting for the first time in my life. This is the experience, of course, that I just related to you guys, okay? I had what would best be described as a typical experience for one who does such a thing, pretty much in line with what Roland Griffiths reports in the recent Johns Hopkins study. Mystical, beautiful, stunning, enlightening, heartbreaking, frightening. But it was profound for sure. And I had been reading and listening to you and Terrence for so many years before I did this. Everything you guys wrote,
all Terrence's recorded material. You know how familiar I am with it. At any rate, I finally had done it, and I was astounded. I wanted to grow them. Or maybe a better way to say it is that they wanted me to grow them. But I sure wanted to learn more. So I did. My first attempt was successful using a strain called Palenque. This is a Stropharia cubensis. There's a lot of different strains, but anyway, this one was called Palenque. This was in October of 2005, 6 months after my original experience. For the next 6 months or so, I sort of messed around a lot with them. I took them often, but never more than 2 or 3 grams. I was very careful when I did it, and I learned a tremendous amount during that period. I was trying to build a relationship with the mushrooms. Shortly after the first flush was picked, I ate about 3 grams and had the following experience. I had taken the cakes I was growing and dunked them in water. Now, there are a number of different ways to grow mushrooms. One way is to make what is called a cake, and essentially you use a ball jar or something like that that has a wide mouth, and you fill it up with a particular group of substances that are essentially food for mycelium, and anyway, that's how you do it. And then you birth this thing out of its jar, and it looks like a little cake, and then mushrooms grow from the cake if you do things right. Okay, so back to my letter here. I had taken the cakes I was growing and dunked them in water, as is common practice in between flushes, as I'm sure you know. I submerged them in a 5-gallon bucket. Well, that night, I was lying in bed toward the tail end of the experience when a voice told me to go downstairs and pee into the bucket. I proceeded to have a 15 or 20 minute debate with myself about the silliness of the proposition. I was naked and lying in bed with my wife, who was sleeping, and certainly my urine would make useless the sterilization rules I was trying to follow. Everything is about sterilization, you know. Anyway, I finally got tired of fighting the voice in my head, and I went downstairs and I peed in the bucket, right in with all my cakes. The next day, I put them back in the fruiting chamber, and a few days later, I had an enormous, beautiful flush. I was stunned, and I kept all the mushrooms from that flush and recognized that they were special, that they were sacred. I used them only in ritual situations from that point on. Okay, fast forward to Saturday, April 1st, 2006. I ate 6.5 grams of the mushrooms described above. This was the first time I had taken a threshold dose since April of the year before, my initial experience. This time I got quite ill, and I threw up nearly everything I ate. Many of my earlier experiences, although lower in dose, also came with some level of vomiting, but it was somehow different than regular vomiting, like the act was a payment of some sort, a giving of the self to the earth or the mushroom or something in return for the gifts that they provide. I seemed to be compelled at times to vomit in this manner, but in specific places, like I was being directed, do it here, and there, and here. Since then, this has become much more clear. Well, actually, I don't know if it has at this point. Anyhow, I got sick, and I threw up everything at the base of this tree that has since become very special to me, and which I revisit in ritual. The rest of the evening was very difficult, anxiety-ridden, very unpleasant. On a side note, I had originally planned to eat the mushrooms on Sunday, the 2nd, but for whatever reason, did it a day earlier. So the next night, April 2nd, I did it again. But I have to rewind for a minute. A week or so earlier, I had decided to germinate some cannabis seeds and attempt to grow them somewhere on our land. On Friday, the 30th of March, I prepared the seeds and had them soaking in a Ziploc baggie, folded inside a wet paper towel. Back to Sunday, the 2nd of April, 2006. I felt really badly in the AM, sick, still trying to reconcile the rough time I had experienced the night before. I finally went outside in the afternoon and raked some leaves and built a bonfire. I was walking down by our pond. We, quote-unquote, own a small farm-type piece of land, about 7 acres. Since the time that this was written, we have another 6 acres, and I mentioned 13 acres earlier. That's the only reason why I say that, because there's an additional six acres to the property now. At any rate, I was walking down by our pond, and I decided to try to cut away some of the excess cattails that had grown up all over the shoreline. I took my big machete thing and began to cut them away. As I did this, I approached a spot just off the lake that seemed to somehow call to me. It was really strange, like deja vu big time. So I gathered up a boatload of leaves and spread them all around this little area, maybe 6 foot square. I burned the entire area, leaves, sticks, branches, all kinds of things. I had a great little fire going there for over a couple hours. This was the place I would plant the seeds. This is a sacred place, and somehow I sensed it even then. It was about 4 p.m. at this point. At about 8:30 p.m., I began again. Again, now, people, this is the 2nd of April, last year, 2006. At about 8:30, I began again. 6.5 grams of the sacred flesh of Palenque. I ate them outside, looking at the stars with my dogs, Maisie and McKenna. The weather was clear then. I went inside, and I began to pray like I do, Lakota style, to the six directions, to the ancestors. I'd rather not get too specific here. By 9 p.m., things were getting wild outside. There was a gigantic storm. I had been saying my prayers for the earth and the children almost nonstop, and I was beginning to feel some sort of communing with my ancestors. It felt really strong. By 10 p.m., the experience became more intense. My chest became very tight, and I began to hack and cough incessantly. But I was told by a voice inside my head that I would not be puking tonight, that tonight I would, quote-unquote, keep it all down. By 11 p.m., I was deep in a trance and engaged in some sort of spiritual confrontation. I began to chant and scream and pray. I ran around my entire home and spat on every entryway, every door, in a ritual of protection, purification, bunch of question marks after that. The spit, quote-unquote, being generated from this internal conflict was somehow magical. I was told that this was the case and that I indeed must mark all the doors. A similar thing occurred outside in certain locations around the land. At 11:30, things got more strange. The battle seemed to be over, and I was still alive, but I thought I was going to die throughout the entire ordeal. It was made clear that everything I was doing was for the children, for innocent people, for the ancestors, for the suffering of the ages. I put my hand on the cedar rail that runs above our fireplace. My hand sunk into the wood, and I felt the suffering of every tree that had ever been felled in greed and disrespect and indignity. I felt it all, somehow, and tried to make payment from my blood and my bile, my spit and piss. There was something in my chest. It felt like a stone, and I had to get it out. I remember saying over and over again, "This child will be born." It was brutal. I went around the house again, doing this spit protection ritual. I ran downstairs where they grow. I blessed it and prayed over the spot and spit there. By now it was a mess, coughing and sweating and drooling and snot pouring from my nose. I was basically like an animal at this point. I went to the basement door, and I kissed and licked the wood. Again, I felt the rush of history, the suffering of nature. I screamed, and I was all of a sudden being instructed, compelled. I ran toward the staircase to go back upstairs. I stopped at our cat's litter box. Our cat's name was Sage. I stopped at Sage's litter box and reached in and grabbed a handful of her feces. I screamed and put them all in my mouth and chewed it all up. I screamed that it was the earth and I was the earth and that we were the same. I held it in my mouth and I mixed it with my saliva as I ran upstairs into the room where I had prepared the cannabis seeds. I grabbed the baggie, and I pulled the paper towel out of it and held it in my hand. I was told to go outside to the spot I had prepared by the lake. I took off my shirt, and I smeared snot and sweat all over my chest and went outside. I still had a mouthful of saliva mixed with my cat's poop. It was warm now, like mud in my mouth, acrid, bitter mud. The dogs came with me. The storm fucking raged. Lightning like crazy and thunder. The wind was wild. I walked down toward the spot. I paused in the rain. I held out my hand with the seeds in it. I spat everything I had in my mouth onto the paper towel and continued down toward the lake. When I got there, I began to pray furiously and puke and spit and scream. Whatever was in me was coming out. I made huge yawns and wild facial contortions. This went on for some time and was the defining experience of my life up to this point. I can't say for how long. But finally, it came out. And it was the strangest thing. A small ball of mucus that I could just roll around in my mouth. Like nothing special, but it was special. It was the stone. Afterward came the obvious sensation that whatever needed to get out was out. I prayed again to the ancestors, to the six directions, for the children, for the earth. And I took the paper towel with the seeds in it in the palm of my left hand, and I slammed it into the earth. I felt my hand enter the earth and held it for a moment. Then I stood up. I spit the stone onto the earth where I had just planted the seeds. I pissed like I have never pissed before, and it was done. The dogs were there, and they knew then that that land was sacred, and that they must protect it. I became elated, and I ran around in the mud and lightning and rain, screaming, "It's done! It's done! I did it! We did it!" I made my way back to our house and was an absolute mess. But I felt that the ordeal, or the test, or whatever had just happened, was completed, and that the deed was done. It was exactly 11:58 p.m. on the 2nd of April, 2006, when I walked back in the door. Shortly after midnight, I had the flash, the insight, my own personal wow moment. Now remember, this was written October of last year, okay? And I'm reading it directly, so the time frame may seem wrong. Okay? My own personal wow moment. It has been the primary focus of my life now for the last 6 months. It is also the reason for the attachments to this email. In short, it goes like this. The mushroom heals the head and the heart. Silver heals the body. If we could somehow bring the two together, we would have something very good. I documented all of this and began to experiment. I failed over and over again, everything I tried. But the silver always killed the spores. For 6 months, I tried all kinds of different methods to get Stropharia spores and mycelium to colonize in a solution of silver nanoparticles. During the entire period, I did the mushroom ritual every 2 weeks at the new and full moon. I went down to the lake every time and went through this whole business. Sometimes it is extremely painful. Sometimes not so much. for me. The way it works is like this. I ingest the mushrooms. I pray. I listen. I pay attention. At about the hour and 15 minute mark, I always go down to the lake. I do a specific set of Lakota ancestral prayers. Prayers taught to me by my grandfathers. Prayers that I have done. Prayers that I have done for many years. But never in the shared presence of another species until this last year. At the end of the set of prayers, I smoke cannabis furiously. The exhalation brings on the reaction out of my chest and stomach. Something comes. The thing described above. I am then usually directed on how to use it, what to do with it. Sometimes I am told to put it right back into the earth. Sometimes I am told to put it other places. But I don't know what it is, Dennis. But I think it can heal as well. I think. Shit, I don't know. But it ain't just spit, I can tell you that. It's some kind of alchemical soup manufactured by my body in cooperation with the mushroom and cannabis and the earth. I don't know. Whatever the hell this means. Anyway, they were growing there. The cannabis seeds I planted were growing. The ritual is usually completed less than 2 hours after ingestion. After that, regardless of the dose, 5, 6, 7 grams, I can function perfectly normal, yet I remain in constant contact with the mushroom. I have greatly increased physical skills during this time, balance, agility, language, etc. I often go into town at this point and spend time with friends and talk and teach. There are often remarkable times. If the experience begins at 8:30, it usually concludes fully by 2 or 3 a.m. I am often compelled at this point to drink my own urine, which I do without question or revulsion. On Tuesday, April 4th, I did the whole thing again. The experience was nearly identical to the previous one on the 2nd. The only difference is there was no seed planting and no storm. It was a clear night with a beautiful half moon, and a sense like a wild adventure has just been completed and begun. In retrospect, this last of the 3 consecutive experiences was sort of a confirming one that said, yeah, what you think happened actually did. All right, it's about 5 minutes to 1 a.m. on, what the hell is it, April, May, June 26th now. And it's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. I need to take a break, okay? I'll be back in a few minutes and tell you more about all this business. This song is called Breathe. I'll be back in a minute on KOPN Radio Orbit. Yeah. Beyond the image. That's Breathe from ISM. The CD is called Monkey Underneath. Check them out on the web at www.ismmusic.com. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Anyway, I just had to make a quick note there on the chat page. Anyway, okay, so back to my letter here to Dennis from October of last year. When did I write this? I don't know, October 7th, I think. I didn't even date it. Regardless. All right, continues, all right, like this. On October 6th, 2006, just last Friday, the story got more interesting. A month earlier, I tried out a novel new idea for propagating the mushroom in silver. Finally, it worked. I ate the first and only flush last Friday night. It was the full moon, the harvest moon. I went through my ritual as usual, this time knowing that when I went down to the lake, I would harvest the plants that grew over the summer. I did, and they are very special plants with tremendous energy. The rest of the night was as remarkable as the rest of this story. Absolutely miraculous. So whatever it is that is happening here, the first stage is completed. Question marks. An alliance has been formed somehow? Question marks. Between the mushroom, silver, humans, cannabis? Question marks. I still need to complete a couple more tests to verify that the methodology is sound and see if I can improve on it. Then it's a matter of analyzing the mushrooms themselves, I guess. At the very least, I've developed a way to propagate mushrooms in a non-sterile environment. No boiling, pressure cooking, any of that. The contamination problem can basically be eliminated, I think. But I'm hoping it's much more than that. I'm hoping it's a new species of mushroom that can protect and heal the body as well as the heart and the mind. And no one can control it, sell it, suppress it. It will grow anywhere, exactly where it's needed. And where it can't grow, it can easily be propagated indoors. Is it possible, Dennis? All these fucking bioweapons and manufactured disease and all that shit, did they really think they could outsmart the goddess? There is a lot more to say, and the whole thing is filled with more synchronicities than I can count. But that's basically it, Dennis. From my heart, I have to tell you, Terence has been with me since the day he died. He and many others are helping me. I consider him my friend and my brother and my guide. Much of what I have done was discovered from cryptic messages that it seems that Terence left, mostly in his talks. I feel he knew something about this. He knew something was going to happen and how to bring it on. He may not have known exactly what was going to happen, but he knew. He basically told people what to do. Well, I listened, and he was right. The butterfly effect is real, and I think we're learning how to flap. The Monday in between all of this craziness was April 3rd, the 6-year anniversary of Terence's death. I aired our recent interview, you and me and Stephen. It was perfect synchronicity. During our interview, you said, "I don't know what the answer is, but it's not going to be found by the Hadron Super Collider. It's going to be found in somebody's test tube." I think you were right, Dennis, but the test tube is a half-pint jar, and we may not be moving into a new golden age, but it may be the age of silver. Thank you so much for everything. Thank you for allowing me to share this with you. I'm praying that it will somehow make sense and that you'll understand. I need your help. I'm scared. There are plenty who would go to great lengths to see that this not happen. There are people who wish me harm. But I honestly don't think it can be stopped now. I've done everything I can to ensure that. I love you, Dennis. Take care. So, that was it. And attached to that was a number of articles. Of course, the press release on silver and HIV. The silver bullet article from PhysOrg. Yakaman's paper. Of course, I mean Miguel Jose Yacaman, Dr. Yacaman, his entire paper from the Journal of Nanobiotechnology, congressional testimony on malaria from Bill Moeller, the executive director of American Biotech Labs. This was the silver that I used to do this, the product. An audio clip of a couple things I attached, and then a picture. And the picture was the cake, what I call the silver mushroom. And it was the one time that I got it to work, and the mushrooms that that were growing from it, I sent Dennis a picture of it. Now, since then, I've done everything in my power to repeat this. I've not been able to repeat it. I've gone through all kinds of different scenarios. I've gone to great lengths to eliminate, you know, different possibilities to try to determine why I can't repeat the experiment. So, you know, and I've talked to Dennis and others about this, and, you know, it may just be one of these things that, you know, was just a fluke. However, I ate the stuff, and let me tell you, very, very weird things have been happening to me ever since then, and including a lot of people being very upset with things that I'm doing. But for whatever reason, I'm still doing them. Anyway, I'm not sure what's going on, but I figured it was time to just share all this with other people, and if nothing else, let you know, my colleagues out there think about it, talk about it a little bit. Maybe they can help me out, because I've gone as far as I can go with what I know. And, you know, grandfather's finally just basically said, maybe this whole thing's a lesson for me anyway, I don't know. But all I know is that it happened. It worked one time. I don't know what it did, if it did anything. And all of the things that I said are true. They're all things that have happened to me and continue to happen to me. I mean, at the end of my experiences last summer, this night that I just finished telling Dennis about, the October full moon last year, the harvest moon, early October, the last thing that happened was, you know how I said that sometimes when this thing broils up and then ends up in my mouth, I'm sort of instructed then what to do with it. And I was told this time to go and spit it in my lake. I call it a lake, it's a pond, whatever. You know, the 1.5 acre body of water that's behind our home. And so, you know, so that's what I did. Went out on the dock and spit my little thing out there into the water, and then that familiar voice said to me, "I'll see you in the springtime, Michael. I'll see you in the spring." And I basically took that as a sign to stay away from the whole stuff, you know, not touch, not be involved with the mushroom or anything else for the winter. And that's exactly what I did, you know, October through April. And that entire time, I've, you know, tried to replicate this silver experiment that I was able to successfully do only one time, October of last year. And in between it has just been, I mean, I don't even want to go there, you know, but anyway, I think the best thing is just to say it, to get it out there in public, and, you know, let the chips sort of fall where they may. But I hope that it's real, and I hope that it can be replicated, and I hope that it's what I think it is. Basically, you know, something that will cure a lot of disease. We'll just have to see. But it sure frightened the hell out of a whole lot of people, I tell you that much, because, you know, people since then have run away from me like the plague. You know, I can't get Dr. Yacaman to talk about any of it. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. I got to tell you, there's a whole lot of stuff going on under the radar. And, you know, I'm a little bit concerned. But it's what it is, and what happened, you know, this whole, the night that I actually ate the mushrooms that came from this silver experiment, well, the whole thing that always happens to me, you know, when I do this, happened. So I get this this weird vomiting thing, and those spores, you know, from that experiment are out there in the wild. I mean, they're out there. I don't know, you know, if they will germinate. I don't know if they do germinate, what they will, you know, what will fruit from them. My intuition, you know, is that something very good, you know, is happening. But I just don't know anymore. I've been tricked. I've been fooled. I've been beaten up so many times over the last year and a half since this thing originally happened that I just don't know what to make of it anymore. And I sort of just have to surrender to it. Say I did what I did. Maybe it was nothing. Maybe it was something. But, you know, now you, me, and the rest of the world know about it. And hopefully someone can do something good with it. In the meantime, you know, this April, of course, right on my brother Terrence's birthday, you know, I got back on the horse and did it again, you know. Again, 3 days in a row, like I did last year. And the strangeness continues. But I'm certain that it's good. But my body still does the same stuff. I don't know what that's all about. And I don't know. I'm just trying to work my way through it. But, you know, I do this. I do this every, you know, I do it on the new moon and the full moon. Every time. Always. You know, not in the winter, in the summer. At least not last winter. You know, but again now. You know, the new moon and the full moon. You know, I do the whole mushroom business, you know, 6 grams or something. Coming up again this Friday, you know. And every time I'm scared to death. But I feel that if I stop doing it, that it will be worse. That it's actually important to continue doing it. For my family and for me and for my friends, you know, and those in our circle. And yes, it is Stropharia cubensis. I mean, that's the species, the strains. You know, there are lots of different strains, but Stropharia cubensis has sort of since been renamed Psilocybe cubensis. But this is cubensis, not Amanita. I mean, we've never talked much about Amanita. They're talking about it on the website, but I've never done it, so I shouldn't talk about it. But I'm scared of it, and I know that if the popes use it, it's probably something that I don't want to use. So, anyway, I guess I'll just take a break here. Then maybe open the phone lines and, I don't know, see if anybody wants to talk about any of this business. Or I'll look on in the chat room here and see if there's anything that I can add to that conversation, okay? All right, in the meantime, here's Ism. Play this one for you. Come back and talk a little bit more, okay? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM. About 1 now. Stick around. I got Ruth coming to play some music for you in about 45 minutes, okay? Crash landing. That's exactly what I'm doing right now. Anyway, talk to you all soon. This is Ism. The song is called The Fill. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN, Columbia.
If it's good for me, why am I breaking? I begin to say this isn't right. If I pray along, I feel I die inside. Run inside.
Ism. That's called The Fill from their CD entitled Monkey Underneath. All the tracks we're hearing tonight have been pulled from that wonderful piece of music that was released, well, probably in 2005, fittingly. At any rate, we'll hear a couple more from Ism on the way through the program tonight. Got about 40 minutes or so left. And Ruthie getting things fired up in the music room there, in the library, I should say, getting some good tunes lined up for you to take you through to the morning hours. So anyway, stick around. I got a few more things to talk about with you tonight, and we've got Ruth with Crash Landing coming up at the top of the hour, okay? All right, the phone lines, 573-443-8255. 573-443-8255, if you want to chat. Grab the phone here, make sure I can see it. A lot of times people call, and I don't even see the thing ringing. So anyway, you know, give me something else to talk about other than myself, all right? If you want to do that, 573-443-8255. All right, let's see what's happening in the chat here. That's great. Ira says, there's a little tiny fairy moth dancing to the music across my monitor. That's wonderful. I should back up here. Well, anyway, okay, if you have questions, I'm not going to back all the way up in the chat and go try to find them. So if there's anything in particular that you'd like to talk about, please post it now in the chat room, and I'll be glad to talk with you about it. And again, if you want to call, 573-443-8255. Now, the reason that I decided to talk about this tonight was because I finally got to the point where, well, I've been very confused, because there were a number of things that I thought were going to happen that just haven't happened. You know, things didn't go the way that I thought they were going to go. And so because of that, I realized that I may, you know, be confused and, you know, not have, you know, the clearest grasp of what's happening, because I'm in the middle of it, you know, and sometimes it's difficult to see it when you're in the middle of it. So I wanted to share it. I'm sorry, it's pretty intense for me, man, when I go back and, you know, read my own words. You know, it can be powerful, and I appreciate y'all, you know, not judging me because of it, all right? At any rate, I have felt a tremendous amount of pressure to sort of do this, because I don't know what else to tell you, but it seems really, really important to me, guys. And I felt at times that it was connected to things like 9/11. I felt all kinds of things, you know, that this was connected to. The fact that I cannot repeat this silver experiment, you know, has literally brought me to wit's end, to the point where, you know, I've been trying to find someone, and I continue, you know, I put the word out, and now I'll do it publicly, okay? I want to find somebody who would please do some mass spectroscopy for me. That's what I need. I need an honest person that'll do mass spectroscopy for me. And I probably have to be in the room, because I don't trust anyone at this point. And there are a number of things that I want to have looked at. But at any rate, I've had a whole lot of things not happen. I've had a whole lot of disappointments. I've had a whole lot of thrills and wonderful things happen in the middle of it. Frankly, it's just an absolute mystery. And one that I didn't ask for particularly, but one that I find myself in the middle of. And it has caused a lot of, you know, stress and difficulty in my personal life, my family life. You know, my wife Ashley, who is, you know, the most amazing person, primarily because she puts up with me. I mean, she's lived through this whole thing, and there have been some scary things happen, you guys. There have been some very scary things that have happened. And, you know, when I do this thing, you know, when I do it, all hell breaks loose, you know. I get the helicopters flying over, the whole business, and I don't know why. And I'm just telling you what happens, you know. But I've had to deal with it. My wife has to deal with it, you know. And so, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what to make of the whole thing, you know. And nobody knows, you know? Nobody knows.
That's all I'm going to say is nobody knows. I mean, I've asked everyone I should ask. So it comes down to just you, you know. Do your thing. Deal with it the best you can. Make what you can of it and do your best to figure it out. And that's what I'm trying to do. And now I just decided I'd tell you guys about it. Because my intuition is that it's very important, but I'm stuck. And I don't know why this can't be repeated. At any rate, you know, there's a lot of sharp people out there that listen to this radio program, sharper than me, so let's see if we can figure it out, okay? All right, what else? Maybe I should be more clear here, okay? Bubba on the chat room says, I guess it's Mac Pro, it says, Mike, what are you talking about? All right, here's what I'm talking about, okay? What I've been trying to do is to hybridize the Stropharia cubensis mushroom in a solution of silver nanoparticles. The idea being that the mushrooms will incorporate the silver into their biological matrix, and then when you eat the mushroom takes care of you. And the silver in the mushroom cures you of disease, just the way Dr. Yacaman said it would. And now the mushroom makes it. That's why. That's what I'm talking about. All right? That's what I'm talking about. It happened one time. Maybe it was enough. I have no idea. But I don't know what else to talk about. I mean, it's just been, you know. I guess I really don't have anything else to say. I mean, really. I mean, I just don't at this point. It's like, no. Mac Pro asked, "Is this using an ormus material?" No. It is exactly like colloidal silver. In fact, that's exactly what I'm trying to use. I've used a number. Well, let's put it this way: the first product, the one that I had success with. What, and I'll tell you exactly what I did, okay? I had a fully colonized cake of, I forget what strain, Stropharia, right? Whatever, Stropharia cubensis. I cut a small section of that colonized cake, just cut it out. Then I took the little section, I mean, small, you know, no bigger than a nickel. And I had another jar that was, you know, I was ready to fill with substrate material. And the way you do this is you put, in this case, I'll tell you exactly what I used. I used 1/4 cup of brown rice flour, 2/3 cups of vermiculite, and then 1/8 cup of regular tap water, and 1/8 cup of American Biotech Labs 10 part per million silver solution. I think they call it ASAP. I don't know what that, whatever. You know, it's a ABL, American Biotech Labs, 10 part per million colloidal silver, essentially. Okay? So, I take the water and the colloidal silver, put them into a little mixer thing, and then take the little chunk of Stropharia mycelium that I got out of the other cake. I put them in there and I zip it. It's like a little blender thing. And I whip it all together. So I cut up the mycelium thing into a billion little pieces, mix it up with the water and the colloidal silver. Now, the important thing is the size of the silver. See, it's nanoparticles. People are asking about monoatomic ormus and this sort of thing. The size is what's important. Monoatomic, I think the ormus, all this is bullshit, I think. But particles of gold or silver or whatever, when they're very small in the nanoscale, they act differently than they do when they're bigger ions and particles. At any rate, this particular stuff, mixed it all up, mixed it in with the vermiculite and the brown rice flour, mixed everything together, and just threw it in a half pint jar, little layer of vermiculite on the top. Threw the cap on it, tightened it up, and let it sit. Now this is, I'm just mixing it up with my hands, essentially. You know what I mean? I'm breathing right over it. I didn't, no sterilization, no pressure cooking, none of this. Right? Anyway, 10 days later, there it is. Well, I don't, I just haven't seen the proof, Mac Pro, about the whole Ormus thing. Alright, that's all. You know, I mean, if all this stuff is real, then why doesn't somebody do something fantastic? Why doesn't somebody do something remarkable if all of it is real? I mean, is it all just for themselves? Is it all just so that they can, you know, be healthy and happy and rich or something? I mean, because if Ormus and monoatomic gold and monoatomic silver are so special, then why doesn't somebody do something good with it? You know, why don't they do something remarkable with it? I don't know. I mean, I just don't buy it because I haven't seen anyone do anything remarkable with anything. You know, then I'll know it's for real. Right now, I just see a bunch of people selling stuff. At any rate, 10 days after I did this, you know, there it was. Perfectly white, snow white, beautiful looking Stropharia cake. And so, what I did then, of course, was put it in the fruiting chamber. And when I put it in the fruiting chamber, I forget the exact day. I have it documented, but I just don't have it with me right now. But shortly afterwards, within a day or so of that, it was new moon or full moon. And so, actually, I remember now exactly because it was the new moon before the full moon in October. So it was 2 weeks before the harvest moon. And of course, I did this again, and I ate the mushrooms like I always do. And the one message that came through perfectly clearly during that experience was, if the cake fruits, eat whatever comes from it. That was it. It basically just told me if the cake fruited, that I should eat whatever came from it. And I made a commitment that I would. And, you know, I was scared. It's scary because I didn't know what was going on. I still don't know what's going on. But I figured this whole thing of, you know, heal thyself and all that and taking your own medicine, you know, is something that you have to do. So before I talk about it or tell anybody else about it, I had, you know, did it myself. Anyway, 2 weeks before the harvest moon, I had just birthed that cake that I had been successful colonizing, and then I had another mushroom experience. The mushroom or the ancestors or the grandfathers, whoever, said, eat whatever comes from that cake. I said, okay. 2 weeks later, 13 mushrooms, beautiful mushrooms, grew from the cake that had been colonized and without sterilization and in a silver nanoparticle solution. And I ate them all on the harvest moon. And I went out, and, you know, I have a medicine wheel in my backyard, a fire circle. And I do ritual in the medicine wheel, in the fire circle. You know, so I did that, like I always do, you know. Anyway, I did it on the harvest moon, and that was that. I went through the whole business of, you know, the whole vomiting thing that I told you about, and again, it's specific and it's sort of directed. Anyway, I did it, including in my lake. And then the cake, I immediately took it and buried it somewhere safe in the wild. So that, you know, it's out there no matter what. Now, I don't know, I don't know. But I did whatever I could do with the whole thing. And I'm telling you all about it. And it has been a remarkable thing for me. But at the same time, just, you know, almost too much. And I can't do it anymore. You know, I don't like secrets much anyway. You know, so now whatever I've been doing, whether it's just all silliness, whether it's stupid, whether it's just nothing, I don't care anymore. Or whether it's a big deal, or whether it's just somewhere in between, which is probably most likely. You know, I just wanted to share it with y'all. Let's see, Mike Hagan, it would be great to have the original La Chirera Strafaria strain. I think all you got to do is sort of go down there, basically, Ian, or Icaro. You know, I mean, it's very interesting, too, because for me, it doesn't matter. I mean, I've grown many, many different strains. You know, they're all Strafaria or all Psilocybe cubensis. But I've grown Ecuador, I've grown Mazatec, I've grown Palenque, you know, Australian, Malabar, Treasure Coast, all kinds of different things I experimented, right? They all have the same exact effect on me. I don't see, personally at least, you know, I don't see a difference between any of the strains. It just seems to me that the species in general, at least to me, is communicating in the same manner and in the same fashion. The stuff for me is, you know, it's weird because the first time that I did this, and, you know, toward the beginning of the program at the midnight hour, I told you about my first experience. Well, that was a typical experience, you know, with the visionary stuff and all the images and all that. That's the only time that's ever happened to me. Ever since then, you know, what I get is communication. And sometimes I ask the mushroom what's going on, and it says, we don't know what's going on. All we do is sort of, all we're doing at this point is just sort of opening the door. And you're communicating with, you know, your ancestors or whatever. I mean, and this is what comes through to me in particular, you know, my grandfather Wallace. My grandfather Wallace Black Elk. And Terrence. And grandfather Silo. Kanji Sapa. Wamde Chukala. Hehaka Sapa, my grandfathers. You know, they told me to go to Pine Ridge. I went to Pine Ridge in February with my son. I did something I was supposed to do there, you know. I went to Chicago, did this whole business in Chicago at my friend Steve's house. All of it, you know, outside in his yard. You know, went through the whole business. Certain trees, certain areas. And the trees speak, you know. The trees speak. I told Kent this. I might as well tell you everything. What the hell? I don't even care. It's 1:30 in the morning. I told Kent, you know, when he was here a couple of days ago. You know, he's my teacher and my best friend. And I showed him everything, you know, where it all happened. And he can tell you. He can tell you I'm telling the truth. He can tell you that I'm telling the truth. But, you know, I go to Chicago. Do it in Chicago. You know, whatever happens there, I don't know why it happens, but I do it. I did it. Went to Las Vegas last year. In August, went to Las Vegas wearing a beautiful Strafaria mushroom cap right around my neck. Gigantic one. It was 120 grams wet when I picked it, about 12 grams dry. The cap alone weighed about 8 grams. I put a freaking thread through the cap and wore it around my neck. To Las Vegas and went through the whole business there, scared to death. And I don't know what happens to my body, you guys. I've been trying to find, you know, a reference to it in the historical literature. There's a guy whose name is Dr. Michael Harner, and he speaks about this tribe that's called the Jivaro. J-I-V-A-R-O, maybe two R's, I'm not sure, Jivaro. But this is the only place I've ever found any reference to to this fluid, this stuff, whatever it is that comes up. The Jivaro, supposedly, and there are very few people that have spent time with them, but the Jivaro, they vomit this sort of substance, and the people who have witnessed it say that it's some sort of a magical fluid that allows them to do their shamanic work. It allows them to do their magic, you know, or whatever. And the only way that I found that reference was because there's a chapter in True Hallucinations where Terrence talks about this psychofluid, I think he calls it. And that was all I had to go on. I was just trying to find a reference to it. I tried to interview Dr. Harner, you know, and he doesn't want to talk to me. Everyone I've tried to get a hold of with regard to the silver experiment and mass spectroscopy and using equipment, maybe from the university or whatever, they run away from me so quickly. It's like they're scared of me. I'm not trying to hurt anybody. You know? Anyway, I'm just trying to do the best I can, you know, with what's been dealt to me, just like you and everybody else. And, you know, if anybody has any clues, you know, I'd be glad to listen. What else? All right, we got about 15 minutes. I'll play a couple songs, probably. And say that next week, what are we going to do? Yeah, I got Richard Allen Miller will be back with us. And Richard's a person who I've been talking to about this. I think that the whole silver hybridization experiment, you know, if he can't help, nobody can. And he was blown away when I told him about it, you know. He said, "Holy shit, Mike." He said, "You should publish this." He said, "It's a big deal." But I don't know. You know. All I know is that it happened one time. My life has been a complete catastrophe ever since it happened. And, I don't know. I just wanted to share it all with you, okay? All right. My life is good, though. Don't get me wrong. All right? I'm a lucky man. And my children are healthy and being loved and taken care of by myself and a wonderful woman. Ashley's wonderful, and she's, you know, been so supportive in the middle of all this. It's been really hard for her because she doesn't know what's going on, and she's been very scared at times because people have done things to scare her. You know? The number is 573-443-8255. If you'd like to call. Somebody asking about the number there in the chat. Alright, this song is called No More. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. That's Ism from Monkey Underneath. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. All right, I've had a number of callers and emails and people concerned and a little confused, and I'm sure it's been confusing. But the archive, you can go back and listen to this and maybe clarify for yourselves what I've been talking about. But essentially it goes like this. I've had some very strange mushroom experiences that, you know, are repeatable in what happens to me during the experience. I had, early on, a year and a half ago, an idea brought on by one of these experiences to try to hybridize the Stropharium mushroom with silver. I had just recently read, and I'd been interested in silver for a long time, but I had just recently read an article in the Journal of Nanobiotechnology that was written about a paper, a peer-reviewed paper that had been released by Dr. Jose Miguel Yacaman from the University of Texas at Austin. The title of the paper was Silver Nanoparticles Kill HIV. The paper went on to discuss how silver nanoparticles essentially could kill any virus and mitigate many, many, many diseases. Now, I'd been using this American Biotech Lab stuff for a while, and I found some congressional testimony from this man. His name is Bill Moeller, M-O-E-L-L-E-R, and he testified in front of Congress, Committee on Africa or something like this, and they had a tremendous amount of documented evidence that their American Biotech Lab silver product cured malaria. 100% of the people who went on a 5-day regimen of ABL, 10 ppm silver, were cured of malaria. Every one of them. I realized very early that the research was being repressed. It has been since, like so many other things, you know. Anyway, the pharmaceutical powers that be have no interest in this sort of thing. And they're very serious about not letting it happen. So my idea was, if I could grow a mushroom that actually reproduced itself with silver already, you know, as a part of its matrix, well, then the game would pretty much be over. I thought I had done it. I did it one time. I don't know if it worked. All I know is that ever since I did it, I've had a tremendous amount of, trouble. And I'm just trying to, get out of trouble. But I will not be pushed around. And I will not submit. And everybody knows what I do. Anybody knows how I talk. So, like it or not, that's the way it is. And I'm going to get out of here. Say hello to Ruthie. She'll be with you in a few minutes. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back next week with Richard Allen Miller. Okay? I love you all. Take care.
Such a crazy dream. The colors were so strong. The sun arose on the surface. And I was carried along. All right.
had such a